Greetings, Be Aware people. Welcome to Be Aware Nation, a corporation for evolution. We invite you to interact with us as we explore, develop, and synthesize awareness throughout layered living. We're evolutionizing the way people think, feel, and deal by merging medias into minds that matter. Being aware is a state to put your mind in. Join us as we consciously work to adapt the frameworks, models, and structures that make up all of our present-day operating systems and ownership models. We're here to fully explore the realm of where the ethereal becomes the material. Be Aware Nation is guided by the wisdom of the human spirit, utilizing the laws of science.
Greetings, Be Aware people.
Hello there today, out there in Be Aware land.
This is Sally Lutzer.
This is Barry Lutzer.
Welcome to you all. Thank you for joining us.
We're here at Be Aware Nation, where we say that being aware is a state to put your mind in. And clearly in today's world, being aware is something we all really want to do. There's an awful lot to be aware of and so many reasons to be aware of it.
Absolutely. You never know.
And so our certain mandate here at Be Aware Nation has always been to try to raise the bar in terms of what we call merging medias into minds that matter. And we do that by trying to take this concept of being aware as a state to put your mind in to a new level in terms of how we live our lives on an everyday basis. And translating the types of ethereal euphoria that make up what we have been speaking about in terms of what awareness is and how awareness translates into our sense of being and our sense of self. And the whole ideal of how we can take an aware self to an active living self, and how that gets translated into a model that we can reliably follow on a day-to-day basis. And what are the components that make up that model? And so we've been exploring all the variations of how human behavior sort of expresses itself within that construct of how everyday life gets led and how the self pursues a greater understanding and knowledge of itself. And that clearly has been a long-term human study since the beginning of time. We've really been many ages at looking at self from many angles. And so many aspects of our interpretation of self remain rooted in some very fundamental, profound declarations from early on in terms of human development and human evolution. The human family has been certainly going along and developing and becoming more technologically sophisticated. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that has sophisticatedly translated into a deeper or broader or more meaningful understanding of the human self in that process. I would venture to say quite the contrary, that the significance of how human understanding, the idea of the sense of self, that becomes known to oneself as they live has become much more profound in these later years in terms of a living sensibility. And certainly that comes about from a sophisticated technological understanding wherein the prowess of technological wonder has enabled us to supersede an awful lot of the human dilemmas that have plagued many societies in the past. from evolving to the kind of sophisticated level we find ourselves at today. And yet this sophisticated level we find ourselves at today, in truth, because we are so aware, has really become almost the most endangered point in our human development. Because of our pursuit of a type of sophistication that has not been allowed to be equal to a sophistication of our mind, of our understanding, of our human knowledge about what it takes to live within that kind of technological realm. So it's really, I think, that's the conundrum of where we sit today. And really the background noise, the background conversations, the background cacophony of energy flowing today is the reason so many feel so chaotic, is because so much of that energy flow is not being conversely exchanged. Meaning that the energy has grown to such a sophisticated level, we have not been able to articulate properly what that sophisticated level means in terms of its influence or impact or implication on how we live our lives. So it's really become quite a conundrum for us, because we feel as though our sense of self has a particular sophistication to it, but we aren't able yet to converse properly, demonstratively, definitively, about the kind of experiences we're having that illustrate what this technological wonder of opportunity presents to us as humans, and the challenges we face are so significant. That's where our human understanding, our human awareness, our human interpretation, the things that we've spent so many years learning about to properly discern and delineate, what are the values, what are the principles, what are the ethics, what are the morals of this particular process that either mirror my own or don't. And when they do, there is a particular kind and type of harmony and peace and happiness that seems to prevail. One of the reasons there doesn't seem to be a lot of that today certainly could be looked at as if, wow, the security issues we face today, nationally, internationally, globally, the nature of the economic woe, the inequity of the systems at all. There are many reasons to feel the plight of many, and yet there is certainly lots of ways in which that human resource, that human capital has risen up to showcase a particular level of creativity that has brought meaning, that has brought understanding to bear in terms of how this formula is meant to come together and how it can best be lived and how we can be aware of what these implications are to our social fabric. What does it mean to really trade away the values of our experience? How do we exchange the profitability of our values for the goods and services that now make up our everyday lives? It's quite an interesting formula that we've constructed for ourselves. And in truth, and indeed, no matter who you seem to be listening to today, the conversation and discourse seems to be centered around this idea that nobody asked me. I never agreed to this. What happened to the social contract I signed before? What happened to that social fabric that I thought I belonged to? When did these processes that have so altered the way in which we live transpire? When did we hand over the keys so completely to our sovereignty, to our autonomy, to our sense of self, to all the principles that have really guided and founded this country for certain in America? The very nature of what it is we have come to know to be Americans and the freedoms inherent in that have so eroded that there is very little left of what anybody could possibly believe is a social agreement that could be dependably relied upon. And that's where the dilemma arises, because we don't have a social relationship to each other and to the process at large. We feel adrift, and everyone ultimately is exposed and vulnerable and endangered. Not just the marginalized for whatever reason, but everyone.
So you can no longer separate yourself from what you would call someone who is marginalized. You can't separate yourselves from a quote third world country, a population and their needs to your own needs. You can't even on any level whatsoever. Those who have a way of living that is less fortunate than yours, and those who have a more abundant living situation than yours. There is no way to separate yourself from either end, however you fall within the spectrum. Because those who have and those who do not have, obviously the distance between is becoming greater and greater. I think we just heard yesterday some statistics that there's how many young people unemployed in...
60 million young people between the Middle East and Africa are unemployed and have really very little options to see employment.
And so obviously then within that given culture, it's a war economy. It's a organized crime economy. It's whatever the gray market, the black market, whatever market they can find themselves in, because they're certainly not accessing the mainstream marketplace. And so when you look at how you can no longer have this apathy or this sense of security, because someone else is doing it for you, it's just not real anymore. I mean, I think we came from a time when generationally there was a World War II that gathered people together, and then after that rebuilding, you know, the marketplace, rebuilding homes, rebuilding families, immigration. We look at what's happening in different parts of the world today. You know, so many countries, like, for instance, Ireland, Dublin as a city now is such a melting pot. Holland is having very difficult time with their ethical and moral points of view about who should be there and who shouldn't. Australia has said, sure, you're welcome to come to Australia as long as you understand that we have our way of living and you'll adhere to that. We're not interested in you thinking that you don't have to respect the ways of governance that we've set up. So we're just all becoming so much more interconnected at such a rapid pace. The pressure of the human force that is causing us to have to look and see how we are going to interact with each other. And so that apathy, that retreatment, if you will, where, you know, in certainly in terms of a U.S. culture, where the, you know, the consumerism has caused us, and with the technology, has caused us to become more and more isolated, not being a family, having a simple thing as a family dinner together, having friends come over and be with us, you know, joining a club, a bowling league, you know, whatever kind of club, you know, all of that has waned away. And so, you know, our economic quotient, our equity quotient, our emotional quotient, our quotient for community is so being redefined without, as you said, Barry, without our even agreement to it. And unless we find a way within each of ourselves to participate on some level to how this agreement is being crafted without our input, we're in for a pretty wild ride, as if we aren't already.
I mean, clearly that's the nature of the dilemma, that we are indeed on a wild ride, and the wild ride we're on is one that's causing us a tremendous amount of angst, and what's happening now, and indeed across the spectrum in almost every system, we're finding the systems undergoing transformation as a result of the evolving, developing technology. But the system itself, underlying it principally, isn't moving those principles or values along significantly enough to equate with the differential created by the technological difference. And so the technology continues to provide greater and greater access to more and more information, data, content that simply overwhelms any previously known framework for contextualizing, for culturalizing, for in living system terms, for categorizing, you know, the ways in which this concept of life is moving too fast to even catch up. So if it's moving too fast to even catch up, are you best off sitting by the side and not bothering, or are you better off constantly throwing yourself in and either able to grab a hold of or spun off, and you either have the tenacity and the courage and the wherewithal and the willpower and the spirit to continue to pick yourself up and throw yourself back in there no matter how many times you get spun off. And yet the significance of what the challenge we face is that each time we do get spun off, as human beings, we possess an enormous amount of creativity. We possess an enormous amount of willfulness and drive and motivation. We've certainly delivered for ourselves an incredible sense of community and sense of you know, development in the realm of commerce that has caused us to probably go overboard in terms of our excitement for wanting to live out a particular type of life that simply isn't sustainable because so much of the underlying principle and value relative to how these formulas move across the social landscape really happen. And we haven't had the information. We haven't had the data. We haven't had the experience on a global basis previously to know what happens when this level of information flow gets absorbed, exposed, and taken up. And in what ways does it tilt? What ways does it fulfill? What ways does it create a sense of balance or a sense of imbalance? And
but,
so,
for instance, we were just getting some information about nanotechnology and the ability for nanotechnology to really gather such large amounts of data so quickly, and the storage of it is so minimal, and that allows for these huge amounts of data to be gathered. And in this context, it was about security and our national security, our global security, but mostly centered on the discussion of our national security. And, you know, the idea of as we become more and more chipped, and, you know, if you now all of the requirements to fly, well, now all of the requirements to use the public transportation system are probably going to change quite dramatically. And with that sense of tracking, as you travel just through your normal commutes, will give all kinds of information. You're already giving the information when you buy a book online, when you do this, when you do that. So all these ways that this cumulative information, this footprint about individuals, is going to be accessed and then sorted. And the problem with this is that, again, as Barry was saying, we don't yet have the sophistication to understand how to manage so much data. And so you get these potentially frightening formulas under the guise of security, because there's some sense of safety simply because you have this enormous amount of data. But the data is like the ocean. What's the good of it? We have this huge, incredible mass of water covering the planet. We haven't respected it in regard to it housing the life that lives within the ocean. We certainly haven't harnessed it for power so that we're not using fossil fuels. We don't know how to desalinate it without somehow affecting the entire planet yet. And so all of these things that people have to have a long discussion about, and scientists have to weigh in, politicians have to weigh in, community leaders have to weigh in, the media, which is some form of corporate opinion maker, has to weigh in. And so we find ourselves having, and very often, very real and logical discussions, yet the clock is ticking. And so I think it's that sense of being overwhelmed by this enormous amount of information, and sometimes your eyes just roll into the back of your head, well, we'll just let someone else take care of it. But we have to find a way to manage our own personal information database and how we're going to filter that and refine that and manage that, so that we as individuals and then therefore our family, our children, are not overwhelmed by this incredible push of data.
It's really an interesting aspect to it, that when you think, you know, how many generations before us, so much of the construct of living was really based on a living legacy, so that your children, your offspring, could really see that legacy in process, and you were busy handing it over your whole life. And yet today, what does it really mean to be able to do that when so much of the information that's busy occurring is changing the very relationship, the very definition of what any of the prior experiences really brought to bear as an experience of living? And you say this about increased amounts of data and the nature of nano sophistication, but here we are in having a conversation over the internet, and we're having a conversation over what's called the internet, and the internet was a construct to be able to engage a broader, more connected conversation. And so now we have so many more people engaged in the conversation because the conversation is able to move around the internet. And so that information now touches on so many different node points. And those node points are actual distribution points themselves. And every place and every point that the information transits and touches has an impact. And so the information itself continues to evolve and develop and grow because of that. And every place that it touches now continues to grow and evolve as a result of that contact as well. And so because we have become more and more sophisticated, as we have become more and more accepting of how the internet is present in our everyday experiences throughout almost every aspect of our lives. And yet, so many people know so little about the fundamentals of how the internet even exists, and what comprises the internet, how the internet functions, and how this information made up of the content that flows through the internet impacts their day-to-day lives. And so now that we're getting ready to turn on the new particle collider in August, we are now...
Why don't you explain that?
The significance of physics, I think we here on the radio network we're on had an opportunity to listen to an engaging physicist last week, Dr. Michio Kaku, explain the wonders of physics. And it certainly some of the wonders of physics are the pursuit of what we're really basing the universal view on. And currently part of that study and pursuit is in trying to discover what matter is still made of. And we're still at the pursuit of attempting to create a new view of what the particle it is comprised of. And so there is a new particle generator being put online at CERN, which is the same facility in Switzerland where the internet was born, where the World Wide Web was born, and that what the World Wide Web was born as a result of what was a need in the scientific community for a more expanded platform for experiments, because the kinds of experiments that were producing such large amounts of data and demanded such large amounts of computational power, vis-a-vis meaning data exchanging with data for answers to data. And to accomplish that, they required such vast amounts of power and space to have that occur and to communicate that. And to be able to communicate that demanded the creation of the World Wide Web, in effect, to be able to bring that to light and to bear in a way that people could have a much more visceral experience of it and therefore have a deeper, more meaningful understanding of it. Well, and so that's where we've all been living our lives on a day-to-day basis, as that construct of the internet and the World Wide Web as an enabler for a richer experience of that information has now brought us to this point in time where we are today. And it looks like it's a Yahoo game, a Google game, a Microsoft game, a MySpace game, but in truth, it's really the people's game. And it's the internet, which is really a compendium of domain names, that fundamentally every single place on the internet is present there as a result of residing on the underlying domain name, the basic asset that enables presence on the internet. And so here we are today, where we're just getting ready to go to a new awakening this August, when indeed, when this particle collider comes online, what to accomplish it coming online, excuse me, to enable it coming online, demanded a new facilitation of that information flow, demanded an increase and expansion in information processing.
So, meaning that the existing infrastructure, for instance, like here in the West, it's just copper wires, obviously running the phone lines for your DSL and things like that, and the actual physical infrastructure that we're using to send the data through is old and not been replaced. So not only do we have huge amounts, I think YouTube accounted for the entire internet usage for the entire year of 2005. I'm not clear. I don't know the exact thing, but the point being,
well, what it is that the amount of a bandwidth that YouTube itself is responsible for took a X amount of bandwidth that really in the early days of the internet was the entire usage of the internet.
Right.
And so the how the bandwidth is being applied today and to the information that makes up the substance of our daily consumptions is now about to explode, because when CERN puts the particle generator online, they will be also putting online what's called the grid. And the grid is the new internet. It functions similarly but differently than the internet, and that it is a distributed network. This is the whole concept of cloud computing you might have heard about. And so the significance of how all of this happens now in the ether, the very function of storing all of this data in the ether, the very nature of having this broader pipeline of information flow in the ether is a very, very huge transformational moment in human development, and it's about to occur, and there's not even anyone talking about it, let alone having a meaningful discussion, having a constructive conversation, having a societal discourse that would ultimately result in some form of general agreement that was brought to bear at the community level, so that we at large, as that community, were able to say out loud with pride, or at least with some degree of awareness and knowledge, hey, yes, this is what we agree to. This is why we agree to it. And so when you understand the significance of this August, how the grid's capacity to deliver information, the differential in the kind of speed and substance of how information will be able to flow, I don't know what it takes for anybody to download a movie from London to Tokyo today, a three-hour movie, but a three-hour movie in August will be able to be downloaded from London to Tokyo in 3 minutes. I mean, the significance of how much information is going to be able to flow so quickly will dwarf so completely where we are today. And where we are today, right now, is overwhelmed by information. by the lack of constructs that enable that information to be translated into any kind of meaningful substance that we can use to build our lives around. Because we have yet to be able to frame how that information informs our community, our culture, the commerce we engage in then as a result. We haven't had those conversations. And so we're busy trying to live within these ideals of community, of culture, of commerce, in a completely misinformed and disjointed manner, which seems to continually bring about disarray. And so we are constantly in a state of turmoil and distress and dissatisfaction as a result of participating like that. And so without being able to take a broader, more conceptually
targeted,
oriented, just a broader conceptually theoretical view where we have to recognize what it is that makes up the human living process. We have to understand at these levels, at these points where the human living process has been able to become as sophisticated as it has, where these levels of awareness have been able to arise, where the significance and sophistication of understanding and awareness has brought about a particular kind of understanding of the elements that make up how we live, how we behave, how we function, and the resultant implications as well. Those things need to be translated into a viable functional model to begin to interpret. We really have to interpret the material that's coming our way in a much more meaningful manner. And we aren't even able to bring about the kind of interpretive skills necessary because so few of us possess any type of language capabilities to define, describe, delineate the types of experiences that are occurring, that do indicate, that do inform what makes up these concepts of community, culture, commerce. But we have to stand up and we have to say them out loud and we have to do it in a way that brings a sense of organization, that brings a sense of unity, that brings a sense of willfulness, empowerment. The whole idea of sustainability, it's not just an ideal. And it doesn't just happen because you buy some green products.
There's clearly organizations that are out there doing incredible work. And so if you don't have a sense of your own, one particular area that you think you could have command over, I mean, if you feel passionate and you have the creative idea about how to enact this, then you should go for it and you should, find a way, just gathering two, then gather three, then gather four, then gather five. I mean, it builds. And the power of these small groups passionately enacting change that they think they can manage is the most instrumental way that it will become a collective. And then there's incredible organizations that are out there doing things. They need help. They need volunteers. It's not just about donating money. It's about you being actually having the experience. You know, again, yes, I can buy the green product. That's an incredible participation in sustainability, and we should all do more of it in whatever ways we can. But to have a larger experience of actually day-to-day being in the inside, looking out to change through an organizational effort that then becomes a voice, and then the fabric builds of the collective voices for change. So it's really a matter of getting people involved. If you have kids, you know, their enthusiasm and their energy, perhaps, you know, cutting back on some of the athletics. Not athletics are incredible, but you don't need to probably do three or four sports. Maybe you could cut back on one and do something environmentally as a family. All of the ways that we see people taking vacations now, vacations that have a purpose as opposed to just the luxury of zoning out, which is wonderful as well, don't get me wrong, but, you know, that spending all of that money that we see, you know, oh, we're going to go to Disneyland and change our lives, well, there's probably a little bit better way to spend that airfare and hotel money to change lives and have an experience as a family or a group of friends or whoever you choose to be with. So there are creative ways to use your creativity to really plug in and be aware and take command again. You know, we say time and time again on our shows that our mantra is merging medias into minds that matter. And we are taking the media that is giving us so much of our information and refining that and sieving out what we want for our own mind share, that we're not mindlessly taking in information and just letting it work its way through us however it does, that we're consciously being aware of the type of information that we're allowing into our ourselves, into our being, into our consciousness, and absolutely taking command of how we process that, and then therefore what actions we take because of the information, the thoughts that we're having, enacting them into the passion and design of our life that we want to see.
It's so true. The significance of where we sit today is a very interesting, intersection. What's going on in the world at large today? Food riots, economic crisis, the calling out of such economic inequality that fundamentally fuels not only food crises, but fuel crises, resource crises are beginning to show themselves now on the surface of our global experience. They aren't hidden underneath any layers anymore. The way that this information impacts our day-to-day experience is that it informs us of how every one of those nodes is busy responding to the information as it cascades past them. And so our awareness of the aspects of how life is being led around the globe continue to alight themselves in front of our face every day more and more and more. And the implications of what that means is so significant. We're about ready to honor and welcome the Pope into the United States. And the amount of resource that will be expended to engage this person just for the benefit of being able to go around and make sure that the message of the church is being maintained in the collective will and mind of the people at large. And yet it is, while we are warring at the fullest measure I don't remember how many trillion of dollars it is. The expenditure for the purpose of annihilation of another people, of another culture, of another part of the human family, for
in the name of goodness.
Well, I wouldn't even go that far.
I'm saying that the goodness, it's cloaked in, it's a goodness because we're spreading the good word of democracy, and therefore, because we are such good people, we need to annihilate another culture.
Okay, well, that's certainly a way to say it, but I mean, in truth, what even in the most base form, it's really just for oil.
Of course.
And as a raw resource.
I'm just tying it into the church.
Well, I see, and on both sides, it's the church, it's the resource, it's, you know, the expenditure.
It's the status quo. It's the institution
right.
that we all must adhere to, our government, our church, you know, all of these frameworks that keep us in line and remind us that we are not capable ourselves, that we need these institutions at this degree to make these kind of determinations and moral framework for us, because they know what's best in the name of our good founding documents. I'm talking about here in the United States, of course, that we the people have given this power to these institutions because clearly they must know better than we do. And so now we've given out so much of our power as a people away that we're playing catch up at a time when now the planet is crying and saying, what about me? So if we thought our plate was full just from daily life to then dealing with the world situation and then our poor little planet, it takes true human spirit at this point to really enact something meaningful. And I think it's really akin to gathering ourselves up. It's just as serious as when it was only a minute ago that the civil rights movement happened. It was only a minute ago that Vietnam happened. And granted, we don't march in the streets as we used to because of technology. But we can still gather and we can still exchange information. And I think it's literally a point in time where we as a collective have to stand and deliver and take back that underlying fundamental principle that we are here for the right reasons, doing the right things, moving ourselves around the world, not for greed and gluttony.
It's really, it comes down to really recognizing that this particular place we are in, right here, right now, is a place for transformation. That so much of the emphasis is being put on the transforming environmental considerations that are basically directing and driving and taking over our sovereignty and will and autonomy. And yet in truth, the significance, and it's interesting in light of this kind of event where the Pope comes to see George Bush, I just think that the significance of those two things, That George Bush, a man intent on annihilating the human family for that greed that you speak about, for an unfettered greed that he has simply an insatiable appetite for, that nothing seems to look like it would ever satisfy his need for propriety, balance, equity, and certainly the Pope himself can speak a good line about the significance of how religion and his religion in specific can bring about a finer attunement to human equity. And yet the two institutions are so fundamentally at odds with each other, one ensconced in a belief system enshrined and emboldened by warism, the operating system of fear at its core, and yet the church in its own way has prospered and flourished and brought itself to the pinnacle of where it is as a result of using the same operating system of fear to congeal the people around a particular belief that has given rise to a state of mind, a willingness of spirit, a construct of communal acceptance that has enabled the likes of a George Bush to come in on the side of civic-minded civility, the construct and concept of an illicit, illegitimate democracy that doesn't embolden its people, that robs them of their very core fundamental sense of self, their very freedoms that enable them to think and act as fully enlivened human beings, is challenged and constrained by both of those institutions and both of those institutional leaders in some of the worst ways humans have ever been addressed. And that's where we are today. Having to be aware that the way in which that information is presented to us is what is made up of the media that moves into our minds today. And who is going to make that media matter to our minds? George Bush? The Pope? Who's going to do it? Where in the world are we going to take command of our own personal experience, our own sense of self, our own understanding of what it takes to be complete and whole, to, for our own purposes, to construct a living system schema that is comprised of our own interpretation of what the universal ethos is, what that universal intention tells me through my intuitional experiences, through my euphoria that I have, through my epiphanies that I experience. What does that universal intention speak to me? And how do I translate that into how I engage the global operating system? And how do I participate in my community that reflects what I believe about how the universe informs me? And how do I take and synthesize those two into my own personal sense of self to construct my own personal operating system so that I develop a living system schema that I myself can say is built of substance, merit, and meaning, because it reflects my full understanding of my own interpretation of the UOS, the Universal Operating System. Because I've translated that into my own interpretation of the GOS, the Global Operating System. Because I've taken those two and synthesized them into how I myself view myself and what myself views as a world view, as a global member of the global community today. how do I interpret my own personal operating system in alignment with my sense of the global operating system, my interpretation of the universal operating system? How do I translate those three, synthesize them, balance them, and move them into a system, a living system schema that I can use on a day-to-day basis that reflects in those three ways what it means for me myself to participate in commerce, in culture, in community? The way in which that living system schema can fully be mirrored in alignment with my full sense of self. And that's really the significance of the challenge that we right here today face, this evolutionizing force of energy that is busy creating havoc, turmoil, distress, chaos, is really an evolutionizing force of awareness. An expanded sense of knowing. Greater degrees of knowledge are available to be turned into wisdom about how to live in these challenging times. So how we must look at the energy field, the grid where that energy is becoming the information that flows into the media that becomes our experiences, is where we have to do the work of defining, describing, and delineating what our experiences are, so that we can create the language necessary to communicate the substance, the merit, the meaning of that experience, so that we can translate that and transmute it into our culture, which is comprised of our values, our ethics, our principles. The very things that seem so out of balance are right in our hands. And we ourselves are the ones capable of being able to grab a hold of them and cause them to grow and flourish in the full manner we were here for. And that's what being aware is all about. And that's what we mean by being aware is a state to put your mind in. And we invite you all to constantly join us in the land of Be Aware Nation at BeAwareNation.com, where we can come together and explore the realms of awareness and learn how to translate this ethereal euphoria into an actual living system schema that makes up our daily lives.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us today, and we do invite you to visit us at BeAwareNation.com, and let's explore this further together. Thank you again.
See you in the ether.
See you in the ether.